This is the Radical Geek signing off. But coming up next is Nutty Bites, with your geek queen, Nutty Nuchas, and her upside down and flying co-host, Tech. So sit back, enjoy, and don't touch that dial on your podcatcher.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases, and you do your intro at this point, too.
I don't know what I call people that listen to my podcast.
Well, do your standard intro. Do it live.
Hi, I'm Jason, and Jen's not here, so it's the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast, sort of.
And it's also the Nutty Bites podcast. We are doing a cross podcast because why not? Because we can't seem to stay off of each other's shows, basically.
You just can't stay off of each other, full stop.
That too.
I can't not touch you, Nick. I can't. I'm all over you.
And today we're going to be talking about, Tech, what are we talking about?
Talking about video games that nobody else likes but us, or us individually, or us collectively.
Yeah, or, I mean, they're not completely nobody else, you know, so if you're listening to this and you go, I like that video game, we mean that we get a lot of resistance, or people are like, that's not a real video game when we talk about it.
Or, you don't play this one instead?
Yeah. Exactly. This might even go to the point where we tell somebody we're playing a certain game and they're like, but you're a guy.
Oh, go back to Frail Masculinity. Yeah. Listen to that and you'll get our views there.
I've had a lot of that recently, by the way, because
the game you're currently playing.
Oh, yeah. I love that game so much.
So, Tech, why don't you start us off with the reason that you buy consoles?
Every PlayStation I have ever bought, I bought at the game release of Gran Turismo, specifically to play Gran Turismo. So I bought my PS1 from my roommate with GT1, and then GT2 came out, and I bought a PS2 to play GT3, I bought a PS3 to play GT4, and then 5 and 6 I own as well, and then there's the weird one with motorcycles that nobody talks about, and now 7 is out, or say 6 or 7. Anyway, seven.
It's 7, because Gran Turismo 6 came out for the PS3.
Right. So, yeah, Gran Turismo Sport just came out, and I picked it up for my PS4. And
it's why we bought the PS4.
That's why we bought the PS4, earlier. Knowing that Gran Turismo was going to come out eventually. It's a franchise I have always really enjoyed. I still have all my copies around the house somewhere. I find it to be the perfect feeling of driving a sports car and having the ability to go in and, you know, adjust your springs by a millimeter or adjust a little bit of downforce and then feeling the difference that it makes on the track. There are other games that have had better graphics. There are other games that have had arguably better physics. But no game has had better soundtracks and no game has been more fun.
Do you have an actual, like, a force feedback wheel?
I don't. I did for my Xbox to play Forza. And I had Forza 3 and 4, and they're not bad. They're actually very, very good. The thing that bothers me about driving games and about casual fans of driving games is that everybody goes, well, Gran Turismo is not very good because, well, I could ram my car into a wall at 300 miles an hour and there's no damage on it. So that's a stupid game. Well, you do realize that the whole point of racing a car around a track is not to slam into walls at 300 miles an hour. And generally, for me, racing games are chasing perfection. You're chasing that perfect lap.
Dude, and it's also like, you should be like, at 300 miles an hour, if you ran into a wall in a real car, you would turn into dust.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Some sort of like chunky salsa behind the steering wheel. So for me, what's fun with Gran Turismo is chasing that perfect lap, chasing that moment of perfection, chasing all the gold trophies and all the challenges and all the maps and all the things and trying to get all of these little minute achievements and trying to carve that corner a little cleaner, a little crisper, a little sharper every time. Not just, you know, smashing my way around the track like a ballistic missile and then, yay, I won, yay. You know, I can go play Burnout. Or you know, any other franchise, if I want to just smash around, I'll play Need for Speed. I love that franchise. I love the Need for Speed games. But Gran Turismo, it's perfect driving and it's fun. And you know, Kaz, the director, has this addiction to jazz music, and he puts these really cool jazz tracks in all of his games. I love that stuff. I don't need perfect collision physics, because I shouldn't be ramming into things. And when I do, I reset the race and start over.
Yeah, you should check out, from what I heard, you should also probably check out Project Cars 2. Because that they say that in that game, like, you have to do like everything that you would to a real car. I mean, like, you have to like tune it up and like all kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the neat things with this new Gran Turismo that makes it really, really enjoyable is the game is now in league with the FIA, the Fédération Internationale de l'Automobile, which is like the governing, it's like FIFA for soccer. You got the FIA for automotive racing. And the game is now running weekly and monthly tournaments looking for the best console driver in the world. And they've done this the last couple of times. And what they do is they find the best console racers in the world, they bring them together, and they put you in a real race car. And they see if those skills transfer. And in a lot of cases, they do. And then they take the guys that win the tournament and they put them in a real race car in a real race. And they went to the Nürburgring 24 Hours and won.
Dude, that's pretty dope. First off, the Nürburgring is legendary.
Right. Well, not the Nordschleife. They don't do races. They don't do races at the Nordschleife anymore. But there's the Südschleife. That's the Grand Prix circuit. They do the race there. But you can still go and drive on the old 16-mile, 158-corner Nordschleife. But that's more of like a tourist thing. That they can't hold races there anymore. It's too narrow. It's too dangerous. The speeds of a race car now are way too high to allow that to happen. Nobody else seems to like Gran Turismo, because it always seems that it's, oh, we prefer Forza, or we prefer these other games, or we want something else. And
Want Pimp My Car with racing.
Well, no, and, you know, customization's a thing, and Gran Turismo has experimented with customization, and I don't mind some of those options, and I do like having the ability now you can make, like, total custom liveries, which is really fun, and there's some people that are amazing. I saw a Lancer Evo done up, green and white Hatsune Miku colors with Hatsune on the side of the cars. Really, really cool. All done with shapes and blocks, but it looks 100%. I like these liveries. I like that stuff. So I just started playing it. I'll give you guys my quick review of the game. My overall review, it's weird. It's just like all the other Gran Turismos. They are weird games. They do weird things. So with this one here, what they've done that's weird is that you have to be online all the time with it, which is a little disheartening for some people.
And arcade mode. You can do arcade mode.
You can do arcade mode, but if you want to do any of the actual racing in the game, because there's you know, arcade mode's pretty thin. It's not like the old games where you had, you know, the GT300 Cup and the GT500 Cup and then the F1 Cup and all these other races to do. If you want to do any of that racing, it's online against real people, which is a little weird. Now, the one thing I will say that is kind of fun is you have a sportsmanship score. If you spend your time smashing and crashing into people, your sportsmanship score drops. If you allow clean passes and you do clean passes and you drive like, you know, you drive, you know, sportsmanlike, your sportsmanship score goes up and you get into better races and better tournaments and you race with better people. If you drive around like a dork and just start the race, turn around backwards, and ram into everything, pretty soon the only people you'll be racing against are people who stop, turn around, and drive around the track backwards. So it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Huh. I didn't know they did that. Now, is that an automated thing? Like, it basically registers like how you have driven.
Yep. And then even now that I'm I got to juice up my PSN account, so I can't play. You need PSN Plus to play online, so I'm just doing like the single player races and the challenges and the trophies and that. And even now, if I smack into a car, it'll immediately tell me, oh, you have a time penalty. Oh, you went off the track, you have a time penalty. You hit that wall, you have a time penalty. And all those time penalties in a real race would lower my sportsmanship score, so I know I have to drive better. Which is fun. What's really, really cool is that to be eligible to race online, you have to get a sportsmanship license. To get your sportsmanship license, you have to watch two 3-minute videos. explaining the concept of sportsmanship and how they want you to race. And only after watching the videos and acknowledging that you've watched them will they let you play online.
That wow.
explains a lot. Because I've had a lot of people, not a lot of people, I won't say a lot, but I've had several people come in and complain about Gran Turismo, whereas they won't complain about Forza. And I've noticed the differences between Gran Turismo fans and Forza fans. Forza fans, they're not in it for the racing. They're in it for the cars and how all the cars look. If they look beautiful, doesn't matter how they drive, if it's realistic or not. That's why Forza has over 600 cars in it from Jump Street.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Gran Turismo doesn't necessarily have as good of graphics, even though I think their graphics at points are better than Forza.
Oh, yeah. At some points, you can't tell that it's not a real car.
It's not a real car. Like, because I saw that in the trailer they released at E3, and that's what I was telling people. I was like, look, dude. I was like, yeah, I know it's a game. There were points where I didn't know it was a game. Like,
what I'd love to try is Gran Turismo with VR, because apparently it's insane.
And what I've noticed is a lot of people have brought back Gran Turismo. They've traded it in because, and they say they don't like it. And they never give a reason why. And usually what I've picked up on people is when they don't give a reason why they don't like a game, it's because they suck at the game. Mm-hmm. They never want to admit that they blow at a game. They just, they're like, I don't like it.
Or yeah, they, and you know, Gran Turismo is to racing games what Dark Souls is to platformers.
Oh, you mean yeah. TV smashing, controller snapping.
Right. Gran Turismo is just like Dark Souls. It is an honest game. It is what it is. It doesn't hide anything. There's no rubber banding. There's no cheap physics. There's no cheap AI tricks. There's no nothing. The game is exactly what it says on the tin. If that car is faster than you, it's because it's faster than you and you need to get better. If you can't beat the level, there's no cheat code. It's not that you need, you necessarily need the blue key to get into the wizard door. No. You need to be better.
Yeah.
And Call of Duty is getting a lot of feedback in that area as well, because the beta wrapped up completely here recently because the new game is coming out. And a lot of people, a lot of younger people, mind you, have canceled their pre-orders for it at work because they don't like how the guns handle. They say they don't like how the reaction time of the character is. I'm like, you do realize you are technically supposed to be a soldier in World War II, correct?
But it doesn't work like the laser gun.
And I'm like, so you know if you're using an M1 Garand, that thing's bolt action.
No, semi-automatic, 8-shot.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes, the first run was the M1. It's just the M1, right?
1903. The 1903 bolt action from World War One. The M1 Garand was a semi-automatic 8-shot. That's why it always goes boom, 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 ping of the clip ejecting. But, you know, bullets, the thing that some people notice in some games is that some games have flight time for the bullets, other games don't. So you pull the trigger and expect the guy 600 yards to fall away and die right away. Well, no, there's flight time. It takes time for the bullet to get there.
I think what they're running into is because I tell people this honestly. Call of Duty Advanced Warfare and Infinite Warfare got their faces kicked in by Battlefield 1. Battlefield 1 has one of the best, most PTSD-rending, emotionally gut-wrenching introductions I've ever seen. You're basically playing a battle in World War One that you've lost, and you've been routed, and you're retreating, and you go from character to character, and there are different types of characters, different positions, different, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, you've got machine gunners and riflemen and tank drivers and all this stuff, and you're switching back and forth between all of them. And every time one of those characters gets overrun and dies, because that's what's supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They give you a date when this character was born and died. So it's like a real person.
It is a real person that died at that real battle.
Yeah.
And it is gut-wrenching, and it's awesome, and it's amazing, and it's a wonderful game. And they realize that going into space and having exosuits and jetpacks.
So Call of Duty is one of those games that everybody likes that I don't. I don't see the point in having some 14-year-old play a video game and try to explain why he's a better soldier than me. I don't care about that style of gameplay. You know, I'll play them for first person modes, like the first Modern Warfare with the pistol slide at the end, or that sniper level in the ghillie suit. Modern Warfare was amazing. What a great single player campaign.
The zombie level.
The zombie.
Isn't there a zombie level in one of the games?
Yes, there is.
Yeah. The zombies was always a great mode. Like, I love that stuff. But multiplayer, like competitive multiplayer is not really my thing in a first person, in a racing game, sure. In a first person shooter, not really.
We need to get a group together and play the new Call of Duty when it comes out, because the zombie mode in that game, not only does it have Jürgen Prochnow now in it, it has David Tennant in it, and it has my man Arby's. We have the meats, Mr. Vin Rames himself in it as well, doing voice work. And they've actually designed the characters to look like all of them.
Yeah, but I do really love the Robert Englund, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Danny Trejo, and somebody else, Romero.
I think it was Black Ops.
Yeah.
2 or 3.
Yeah, where they were fighting a zombified John Romero swinging a light stand at you. Yeah, that was really good.
So what I think is interesting, by the way, about Call of Duty, and we're going to skip over this because everybody likes Call of Duty, is watching soldiers play versus kids. And I mean like 10-year-olds, 13-year-olds versus soldiers, because soldiers conserve their ammo, they take care of themselves, they do all this other stuff, and the kids run out in the middle and bah, 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 I'm Rambo. And it's really funny.
What if it's funny? Because I was...
It's funny in a sense that you can see that soldiers' training continues even into their games.
Oh, absolutely. Like I remember when I was my first deployment, it wasn't Call of Duty, it was Halo. And we had a group of guys versus another group of guys that was from the unit that was leaving. And we daisy chained a bunch of Xboxes together, and we were getting down on some like big match Halo games.
Yeah.
And it was the most boring time you've ever had. Because you're like, all right, everybody, we're moving as a unit. Like, we're hiding around corners and checking our six. And like, there's no one is doing anything. Like, we're not running for the vehicles because we know that they think we're going to run for the vehicles. So we're not doing that. Like, it was the most, for like the first 20 minutes, it was the most boring thing ever. And then everything was over in the next like 5 minutes. Like, it was the most, like, if you streamed it, they would have unsubscribed and stopped before anything important happened.
So, Jason, why don't you tell us about this girly game you've been playing? And I say girly game because apparently that's why other people don't like it. But you are in love with it.
Oh, absolutely. I even had my tweet when I tweeted about it. The company who made the game was great. It was your idea, by the way, Nettie. You told me to tweet them, and I did. But no, the game I've been playing recently is Blue Reflection. And Blue Reflection, by all points, is not a game for guys. It's not. And the reason why I say that is I'm not saying that guys can't play it. I'm saying it's not. I don't think it's geared towards guys, because the things that the characters address in this game are all things that a young teenage girl would probably deal with, whereas a teenage guy wouldn't even think twice about it, because we're teenage guys and we're kind of stupid. But this game is a magical girl game. It's basically putting yourself in the role of, say, Sailor Moon or whatever. And it the main character is a girl who was in a dance program and trying to be a ballerina, and she hurt her knee.
Wait. She used to be a
ballerina, but then she took an arrow to the knee.
Yeah, she did. She did. She took an accident to the knee, and now she can't dance anymore. And how in normal anime, she would have to, like, find her inner power to get her knee healed and she would go against her rival. No, in this, she's not dancing anymore, period. Every time she tries to, her knee gives out or can't support her weight when she does a certain move, so she just can't dance anymore. And she has to bite down her own disappointment and upset to help and train her rival at one point. Like, there's so many random little things like that I'm just like, oh my god, if this was a normal person, they would want to murder this person.
So what would the haters say?
like a lot of them are like, why are you playing this game? Like, because here's the deal. Like a game that a guy, quote unquote, would play is dark, bloody, you know, very old school comic book room slash sci-fi fantasy room where like you got that one swinging light bulb, leaking pipes. There's probably some terrible, terrible murder noises going on in the background. Mm. This game?
The Silent Hill franchise.
Exactly. This game is bright. It is literally like it was made in pastels and watercolors. It is a beautiful game.
But this game is just up your alley because you love high school dramas.
Oh, absolutely.
Like that other one that you had tech playing.
Oh, Persona 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's a thing about the whole JRPG genre. Like, if I'm thinking about genres of video games that are out there, I think that JRPGs tend to be the most gender inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're going to have as many girl fans as guy fans of games in that genre. I mean, just look at Final Fantasy.
I'm glad you brought up inclusiveness, because one of the things that made me love this game even more is not only does it address things that high schoolers would address, like there's one point where a girl literally is freaking out because the guy she wanted to ask out doesn't want to pay her attention. Like, it's not even that he rejected her, it's that she just didn't get his attention and she's freaking out and you have to deal with it. But there's a line where you're talking to one of the characters who's actually a tall girl who plays basketball, and you're telling her, you're talking to her about, you know, stuff she deals with, and she's like, oh, I don't care who my friends are, male, female, whatever. I never judge my females by, she goes, I never judge, it's a quote, she goes, I never judge my friends by a name or tag that they didn't choose themselves.
Yep.
That's cool.
I literally had to stop playing the game and immediately post something on Facebook like, oh my God, did you just do that on purpose, Blue Reflection?
Because like, that's how the world should be.
Exactly. And it was the first time I've ever heard something blatantly say, I don't care if you're a male, female, transgender, gay, whatever.
Yep.
I don't judge you by that. It was the first time I've ever heard a game say that.
I judge you by you.
Yeah. And I will use the language that you self-identify with.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I lost my mind. I was super amazed by that.
I remember when I picked up the first, in the same type of game, I remember when I picked up the first Kingdom Hearts game. Ugh. And I saw it on the shelf at the store, and it's like Square Enix and Mickey Mouse? Like, what is this blasphemy? And I played through the 45-minute intro. Just, this is the greatest thing I've ever played in my life. This is an incredible game. And I've played the big ones. I'm not going to get into Dream Drop Distance and 2, 3, 9, 65, 28, 91.4 and all of the other names that make absolutely no sense because I'm not playing any of those. I'm waiting for 3.
Suck. Just we all accept it. They just suck.
Right. Because there was 2, and then 2.5, and then 2.8, and 3 hasn't dropped.
Dude, I can't say that. That's how crappy that franchise is because I love Kingdom Hearts. I do. I love it to death. I'm waiting on pins and needles for Kingdom Hearts 3, and I've been waiting for over a decade.
Everyone is.
Yeah. But when I played the first Kingdom Hearts, and there was a buddy of mine, Brad, peace be unto him, my good friend Brad tells me, I was like, what are you playing? I'm playing this new thing called Kingdom Hearts. You got to try it. I loaned him my copy for a weekend, and he brings it back, and he's like, yeah, that's not a very good game. Like, what are you talking about? It's amazing. It's Kingdom Hearts. It's one of the greatest games ever made. He's like, nah, I don't like cartoons. It's a pretty stupid game. It's a kid's game.
Oh, man. Oh, Tech. Oh, you just hit on one of the things that makes me see all kinds of nerd red.
And the same for me for a long time. I was like, I remember saying, oh my God, have you seen that new Ghost in the Shell? Man, the Major is hot. And there's always that one mouth breather at the back of the room goes, oh, you think she's hot? She's a cartoon. She's not real. She's as real as the girl in the Samantha Fox poster on your wall. You have about as much of a chance of meeting her as I do the Major. So,
I just don't understand. Like, I know that there is a disconnect but I don't understand how there can be a disconnect when it comes to video games because the term...
It's all animated.
Exactly. Exactly. When someone says, I don't like this game because it looks too cartoony, I'm like, you're playing a computer-generated image. It's a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah. What I loved when Tech was playing his first run-through of Kingdom Hearts was I know Disney as well as, if not more, than to the severity that Tech knows Final Fantasy lore. And he'd get to certain things and he's like, so, all right. And I'm like, oh, you're going to see this person or you're going to see that person.
And then I would nerd out when, you know, Leon would come on. Oh, it's Leon and Squall. And who? It's Squall. And then we'd go through this whole thing. And then, but... The guy that does the voice of Goofy, how many times we get to hear him say things like, Gorsh, Sora, Goose. It's Maleficent.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's so great. And the villains are really well done in that. So I'm going to move on to when people go, that's not a real game. My favorite video game of all time and the game that I will kill everyone on is Tetris. I love puzzle games. I love Tetris. I will school you all in Tetris. Dr. Mario, sure. Puzzle Quest, okay. Bejeweled, you got it. I'm not doing Candy Crush because it's just a ripoff of Bejeweled anyway, and they want you to buy stuff, and I'm not doing it.
When I was in high school and we finally got internet in our library, we would be in there doing projects for school, and we're supposed to be paying attention. I'm on MSN playing the free online browser Bejeweled until my eyes rotted.
You're so young.
I know, right? But no, you are. It's funny you brought these up because I actually just had a renovation, I guess. I don't know. A reinvigoration of the
Tetris. A resurgence? A resurgence?
Yes, a resurgence. Thank you. Because they just released a new Tetris game called Puyo Puyo Tetris. And it's a cross between Puyo Puyo, which is a puzzle game from Japan, and, of course, Tetris. And one of the things with Tetris and Dr. Mario will always have a very secure, never departing place in my heart. Because when my first gaming system was a Nintendo, and my mom and I used to play it together, and we played Dr. Mario and Tetris, and I used to get my butt whipped constantly by my mother. She would school me, and I mean educate me in the ways of Dr. Mario and Tetris. And that has a wonderful place for me. So like those will like I'm planning to buy Puyo Puyo Tetris, and I only want it because of that.
It's great, but of course a lot of these puzzle games have moved to the phones, and there's a lot of people that discount phone games, and it's like, no, you can get just as, you know, old school Final Fantasy on your phone, right, Tech?
Right, you can, but I think we Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, which is a game that I played for the better part of a year. And Mike, if you're listening, hi, Mike. I think
Mike
is still playing Brave Exvius.
And doing better than you, as usual.
Right, because he is a giant luck sack and he gets the drops. The thing that I'll agree with the haters for just a little bit, that I think a lot of people don't take phone games seriously because I think a lot of video game companies don't take phone games seriously either.
Unless you're in Japan, because phone games have become a...
Oh, yeah.
Japan has become very, very adept at doing multi-platform, cross-plat, like, promotions. So they'll have an anime and a video game, and they'll have the phone game, and they'll have the handheld game, and they'll have the comic and the manga.
Right. And, I mean, if you look at the processing power of a modern smartphone, you could play, like, PS2, PS3 level games on a smartphone, no problem whatsoever. And even with some of the Sony Xperia phones, there was the Sony Xperia Play, that the phone was a PS Vita that would allow you to play your PlayStation games. And even now with my Sony cell phone, I can link it to my PSN and remote play my PlayStation on my phone.
Hey, spoiler alert! A lot of people don't realize this, but the Nintendo Switch, it's one of its main processors is the same processor in the iPhone 7.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome. So, like, the processing power is there, but the only games that they want to put out for phones are either Candy Crush, lazy ripoffs of puzzle games that have already existed, lazy ripoff of Angry Birds, lazy ripoff of Flappy Bird, or now the common thing is taking a tower defense game and reskinning it to either Dorky Comical Caveman or Game of Thrones or something else that has nothing to do with the original franchise.
Or it's, Simpsons or whatever.
It's a stupid dorky tower defense game. If game developers took the phone more seriously, I think we all would too. And when game companies like Square Enix, you know, when they bring out Final Fantasy VI for the phone and they want to charge me $25, I think I would be more willing to pay it if there were other games and other things that competed for my attention at that price bracket. Because right now, everything on my phone I can get for free.
See, and I think what I think is the problem is that video game consoles generally have a 10-year lifespan. Sony, at the 8-year mark of the PS3, announced the PS4. At the 9-year mark, they finally put it out. And then at the 13-year mark, which is what we're currently in now, they have basically stopped production on games for the PS3 and have gone solely to the PS4. Phones, however, have a 1-year lifespan at most. And so the technology is continually changing and rapidly so. So developing a game for it, yes, I understand that between the difference in a game between the 6 and the 7 on the iPhone is not going to be that big of a difference, but it is enough to make a gaming company have cause for pause. And so I think that's one of the reasons why they don't focus in on phone, like mobile gaming, as much. Whereas in Japan, handhelds, mobile gaming, you know, gaming you can do on a budget on the go quickly is very high. Because, again, look at Nintendo, the Switch. It's 100% portable, 100% in-house console. Why would you do that? They have a major population that does public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Having public transportation means you're probably doing long commutes, at least 30 to 40 minutes, if not more. You can't take your PS4 with you. You can take the Switch, though.
Well, they tried with the Vita, but it didn't work.
So there's also more than just those types of games that a lot of people are really into. You know, there are, for instance, I haven't gotten it to work on my phone, but I'm hearing great things about the Puzzle Quest Marvel that's on the phones. But you've also got like old school board games like Carcassonne and Catan and Elder Scrolls and things like that. And I don't know, I really dig them. And every night before I go to bed, I do this puzzle game, Flow. And I dig these games. And when people knock it, it's like, don't yuck other people's yum.
I'll give you another example of a franchise that I absolutely love, but I appear to be the only one because... So there's a game company called From Software. And back in the day of the PlayStation 1, they made a big, giant, stompy robot game called Armored Core.
You've already alienated anyone who's listening because you brought up a robot. You remember, Mecha is the least...
Sure. The beauty of this game is that maybe it's why I like it is that there are like 700 individual pieces and you can change arms and legs and shoulders and heads and guns and missile pods. And then everything has to interlink together and it changes the stats and how it moves and flies. And then you have to like enter tournaments and fight missions and be a mercenary. And there's got to be a good dozen of these games on various types of platforms. The last one I played was called Armored Core for Answer. I think it was up for the 360 and the PS3. And, From had another hit. They using the same engine, they created this really, really, really hard slash and fighting game called Dark Souls, So since Dark Souls has been the runaway hit of the last 5 years and everybody loves this absolutely unforgiving game, they're not going back to make another Ace Combat because they don't have to.
Dude, you know, it's funny. Brought up Dark Souls. Me and Hugh, we do a podcast with Jared Skinner.
Not Jared.
And Lauren Scribe. It's called Nostalgia Pilots. And one of the bonus little episodes we've done two so far. We did one on an early Super Nintendo Gundam game and a Gundam Versus, which just came out recently. The Super Nintendo game that came out back in the day by the same guy who did Dark Souls.
Nice.
And I was playing that game and I was like, oh my God, this 2D fighting game is brutal. And I realized when Hugh told me that, I was like, okay. That explains it. Like, this dude has never made an easy game, period.
So I'm also going to tiptoe into the whole MMO thing. Because apparently, unless you play Warcraft, they're all stupid.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a story.
Oh, Lord.
About a young man.
Did he like Jell-O pudding pops?
Named Jason. He loved Jell-O. He loved the Jell-O pudding pops. He had them all the time. But no, he swore. And I mean, he swore. If you had told him to put his hand on a Bible, he would have done it. That he would never, ever play an MMO. Especially, he would never play World of Warcraft. Then he went to the army. Got out of the army. Found out that one of his soldiers played World of Warcraft. Then one of his coworkers at Walmart played World of Warcraft. Then he started playing World of Warcraft. And now he realizes World of Warcraft, it ain't that bad. But what World of Warcraft did do that was bad was they created a business model for games. And some games have found a way around and uniquely so to this business model.
Others, you mean the monthly subscription base?
Yes. Not even that, really. I mean, like, prime example, right? Elder Scrolls Online, multiplayer. I've not played a single minute of it, even though it is free to play. It's just that if you subscribe to it, you get a bonus allotment of the in-game currency. And I still want to know how they do their structure when it comes to in-game buying things and what that gets you. And then there's also games like Guild Wars. And I had a friend talk to me about Guild Wars because he wanted me to play it so bad because I was playing World of Warcraft.
I tried it. I tried Guild Wars. It's not bad.
It has its pros.
And he was talking to me about it. And everything it was really he was pretty. Telling me he was doing... Yeah. Was like super grindy. And I understand World of Warcraft is super grindy, albeit Blizzard has had enough time in the market to know how to do their algorithms. So yeah, you are grinding, but you will eventually get what you're looking for. It may take you forever. Like, I mean, it'll take you what seems like forever, but you'll get it, right? And that little tidbit of getting what you want will keep you going for the next 5 years.
It's the micro reward system, right, is what they've stumbled upon. And, you know, and that's the thing. And I'm not knocking World of Warcraft. I mean, obviously, lots of people like it. I have played it. It was interesting. It was good for a time. And one of the things that keeps people playing is, well, all my friends play this. And that makes sense. One of the MMOs that I played the longest was DDO, which is Dungeons and Dragons Online. And I dug it. Eberron is not my favorite setting, but I really enjoyed the setting of Dungeons and Dragons. It's something I knew, something I could geek out in, something I had a lot of fun. Lord of the Rings was really fun, especially if you like Lord of the Rings and you really wanted to see Tom Bombadil in the movies, but you didn't, so you got it in the game. You know, I've tried Conan. Almost every MMO, I've tried it out, and I've paid for some, and I've free-to-play some. And right now, Tech and I are getting back into STO, which is Star Trek Online. We were beta members.
Yep.
And are you talking?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm just going, and all of a sudden, I'm like, I think I hear something. There's like this bee in my ear.
I had a question since you guys talked about... Oh, God.
Lord of the Rings?
Darn it. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Lord of the Rings.
He interrupts me in the middle of my spiel and can't even remember the freaking question. Yes, what?
He threw me off because you were like, are you talking?
Yeah, because I can't tell because I'm talking. I hear myself in my head say,
power
go.
Through.
Go.
Oh, God.
Darn it now. 3, 2, 1. Moving on. Okay. So... we're getting back.
So MMOs. There's this thing with MMOs with people. It's almost like gang warfare,
mm-hmm.
where you know it's World of Warcraft versus Guild Wars. It's the Jets and the Sharks that are dancing, knife fighting down the middle of the street. You have to be on one side or the other, and if you don't play the correct game, that person just doesn't like you. And like I tried World of Warcraft. I played World of Warcraft for years, 10 years ago. I'm not going back. It hasn't changed that much. I've played it. I got bored with it. I've moved on. You want to talk about niche MMOs?
Eve.
I play Eve.
Or what about, can we maybe later on, can we talk about Star Ocean? Or not Star Ocean, I'm sorry.
That's another JRPG. Never mind. Powering through.
Fantasy Star.
Right. So
online for the Dreamcast.
So we were talking about micro reward system and these games that reward you for playing, and they give you these little tidbits of gear or experience or skills or little rewards that keep you coming back for more. And the MMOs are the best at it. That's how they keep you going with a monthly subscription fee. That even if you've seen all of the game content, you can get a new hat or a new horse or a new sword or see a new dungeon. Or, well, you've beaten the dungeon with 10 people. Can you do it with 5? I'll give you a new hat if you beat it with 5. And those little rewards are what keep us coming back.
Or you can start your whole character over from 1, but we'll give you extra points for your build.
Sure. So in Eve, it's the exact opposite. They don't give you micro rewards. They take them away. Eve is the only game that I know, the only MMO that I know of, that plays with the concept of permanent loss. And Eve is spaceships in space. So let's say it takes you 3 months... of doing missions and grinding to afford the new spaceship that you want. And you finally got your new spaceship. If it blows up, it's gone. And if you don't have the money to buy a new one or the resources to make a new one, it'll take you 3 more months to go out and get another one. So the rule number 1 of Eve, never fly anything you can't afford to lose. And the game is incredibly cutthroat and leads to like a very paranoid style of gameplay that gets old after a while, and so why I quit. But you know, also known as Spreadsheets in Space, Eve is a very sort of like tech-heavy game, but super, super fun for that idea of permanent loss, where you have to check your 6 and you have to fly in a group and you have to have buddies that you can trust, and you're constantly on the lookout for these things, because if it's gone, dude, it's gone.
See, that's the game I remember reading about it, where this guild had invested, I think, over... like, if they calculated it out somehow with an algorithm, like time and money combined. Yeah,
$20,000 worth of kit that was gone.
And that ship, they finally afforded their big, massive...
The very first Titan, the one they called Bob, it took 1,000 players 6 months to build it. They lost it in 8 minutes.
Yeah, because they ended up... because wasn't it like a guy like... fell asleep or
something? he went to grab lunch. He thought he was in a safe place in the game, and he thought he was being guarded by his friends, so he AFK'd for a couple of minutes to go nuke up some lunch. But there was a hidden cloaked ship in the system looking for this Titan, and you can do a thing called a jump bridge. So the ship that was cloaked opened a gate, and an entire fleet jumped in.
You're talking an environment where they actually have spies.
Spies.
People that create characters to go and infiltrate other corporations so that they can get intel for their real corporation.
Yeah. It took 1,000 players 6 months to build the Titan. They lost it in 8 minutes. I can just imagine the look on the guy's face as he's, you know, coming back into the room with like a hot pocket and like a bowl of soup and just as he realizes his Titan is gone. But the game company, CCP out of Reykjavik, felt so bad, and they they were able to identify with the story so much that the wreck of the ship is still there in game now as a monument to the first Titan lost.
It's a permanent deal, yep. Which is very cool. So I've got a question for each of you. Mm-hmm. What is an old school game that you still enjoy playing today?
Old school game that I still enjoy playing today.
Yeah, that you.
How old school? How far back?
It's up to you what you think is old school, because your old school is different than our old school.
And I'm going to go with a weird game that nobody else knows. There is an old Super Nintendo isometric view strategy game called Metal Marines. Mm-hmm. Which is you're on an you have to it's all anime style. You're defending an island against the invading force of another country, and what you have to do is build up your defenses to rebuff their attacks, and then you have to launch your attack against them. And it's all like turn-based kind of. And then when you launch your attack, you've got these big robots called the Metal Marines that drop down, and they've got guns and laser swords and all kinds of stuff. And you progressively, as the game goes on, you get less and less resources on your side, and the enemy gets more and more resources on theirs, and you have to like constantly lob missiles back and forth. It's a super fun game. I don't know of a single other person that's ever heard of it. PS2, there's a game called Ring of Red, which is a what if Russia invaded Japan at the end of World War II, and we split Japan in half, and we ended up fighting in Japan in the 1960s with walking tanks, done as a strategy game. Super, super cool. Ring of Red, check it out.
And here I thought you were going to talk about Metroid.
Oh, I could go on for days about Metroid.
Sorry, not Metroid, Mega Man.
God, don't get me started on Mega Man. But we're talking about games that I like that no one likes.
That's true.
I will give a quick shout out to... oh, my God. Whoa, I can't think of the speedrunner's name.
Who?
No, Grand Pooh Bear is a Super Nintendo, a Super Mario runner. Oh. So shout outs to Grand Pooh Bear and shout outs to Zosti, probably the best Super Metroid player in the world because I watch his stream every time I can. Go, Zost.
And Jason?
A game that I like that no one else likes that is a... Just a niche little ball.
Or just the fact that you're still playing it and everyone's like, wait, you still play that? Because that's the thing. A lot of these games from old school games, people are like, wait, but there's newer versions. I know Jen's answer to this, by the way, and any Talk Nerdy to Me listener knows that it's the original Crash Bandicoot from the PlayStation and that there doesn't need to be any new ones because the first one's the best, according to Jen.
By the way, that is the only remaster that I feel is a true remaster, because the Crash Bandicoot has not had a single thing changed about its gameplay.
So what's the new one? What's your pick? Sorry.
My pick would have to be Star Fox 64.
Ooh.
It was redone and put on the handheld, the 3DS. Those wingmen are just as annoying, just as dumb.
Do a barrel roll!
And just as useless. And Falco is still my emo boyfriend. It's fine.
Is that the one with Fox McCloud?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, have we gotten any reviews from the Super Nintendo Mini that came out? It has Star Fox 2 on it. It's the first release of the game. It never made it out. The Super Nintendo got canceled.
I offered to, what's the word, delay a Super Nintendo Mini for my brother Matt, but he said he didn't want it. Because I found him a Mini, a classic, because he's got two sons, and instead of throwing them in the deep end with the Nintendo Switch, which I also helped acquire for his wife, he was like, hey, let's get the Nintendo Mini. We'll start them out small, then work them up. Funny thing about his kids, they're awesome and I love them. They play the Nintendo Mini. They love it. They keep playing it. But when their mother turns on the Switch and starts playing Zelda, it's like story time. Like, they get in her lap and literally watch her play the game. It's amazing.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
So, but no, I've not got any reviews on Star Fox 2, and that's killing me, because if I ever got a Super Nintendo Mini, that's the first thing I would play.
Yeah, it's the only one I haven't played yet.
Because I even rented back in the day, I rented a Virtual Boy from Blockbuster just so I could play the Star Fox that was on the Virtual Boy.
On the note, I have to give a shout out to our boy Serial Killer and say, man, you want to talk old school retro games? How about that Shadowrun RPG on Super Nintendo?
Yep. I played it emulator.
I never got past the part where you have the bomb in your head. I always explode.
So,
what about that original Nintendo Super the turtle game where you had to run in the overworld and it was those tanks?
God, that game was so, that one impossible jump in the sewers sucked.
So, the Tetris is obviously, because it's my number one go-to classic, whatever. So we won't even talk about that because everybody knows it's the best game in the entire universe. But the other old school one, and I'll probably get the numbers wrong because Japan release and U.S. release, but Final Fantasy 3, 4, whichever one that is.
It's awesome. It's Final Fantasy 3 is Final Fantasy
6, and 4 is, and 2 is 4.
Here?
Yeah, so whichever one that I love.
Tell me about the story.
So tell me about the story. I'll tell you what
I'm like,
is.
You're not on mic. What are you doing?
Tell me about the story of the game, and I'll tell you which Final Fantasy it is.
Making booze.
Shh.
I don't remember.
Is it about a girl who turns into a pink shrieking demon who runs around lighting villages on fire?
No.
Is it about a dark knight named Kane and his buddy Cecil in a floating airship going around stealing crystals?
No, it's earlier. It's more 8-bitty. It's totally 8-bit.
Okay, so that's 2. Anything before that, it would be the Four Warriors of Light.
Yes, then it's
that's
2.
That's Final Fantasy 1.
Yeah, no. Then it's 2.
Okay, then that's...
That's the one.
That's Kane and Cecil.
Kane and Cecil, that's what I thought
it was. Right, so the first boss is a mist dragon, and then this little girl called Rydia comes up to you, and she's mad that you killed her mom?
Yeah, I didn't want to kill the dragon.
Well, you did anyways, didn't you, you sick monster?
Terrible.
You had to kill the dragon.
Yeah.
You're the hero. So you had to kill it. You had to murder that dragon.
No, don't tell Rory.
Rory.
So are there any honorable mentions before we sign off?
For great old games?
Or just any game that people think, why do you play that game?
Actually, this is actually going to be, for me, this is a game that is near and dear to my heart, which I don't think either of you have played either, and I know you guys had the PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Ni No Kuni.
Nope. No clue.
Here's the deal. You need to go find a copy of that and play it right now, because I'll ask you one question, and I know the answer to this, even though I'm just going to ask it for radio's sake. Do you guys like Studio Ghibli?
Let me think about that one.
Hate everything about it. They make garbage movies.
What do I like? Whimsy and good music and nice animation and adorable children?
I hate all of those things.
Well, then you need to go play Ni No Kuni, because Ni No Kuni is a video game that was designed character world-wise, background-wise by Studio Ghibli. All the artwork.
Oh, cool.
All of it is by Studio Ghibli, and no one knows about this game, and the sequel for it on PS4 comes out in January on the 26th. And I am over the moon for this game, because I played Ni No Kuni 1. I was addicted, and it's very rare. I shouldn't say very rare, but it was rare at the time for me to get that pumped into a game. I played it non-stop.
It looks like
a Ghibli movie. Yeah, I've got images.
Just put up a bunch of screen caps on Google, and it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want a copy of that? And this is how niche this thing is. My GameStop only has one pre-owned copy of it,
and it's on what console?
PS3, which we no longer have.
I still have my PS3.
I thought you. I thought that went in the bundle.
No, that was my Wii and my Xbox. My PS3 is still there.
Oh.
You guys need a pre-owned copy of it. I will gladly.
We still only have one controller. But the 2 looks really, really good, too.
Yeah, it's great because they decided to go without continuing or trying to continue the story from the first game. So anybody can join into this now. So they took into consideration that it's going to be on a next-gen console. So anybody can join this game, and I'm so excited.
So Ni No Kuni 2 is coming out soon?
January 26th.
Nice. In North America?
Yep.
And those are going to be some fantastic cosplays. I mean, I'm looking at the characters, and it's like they designed it for cosplay.
I'm going to have to scoop this up. That looks really good.
Is you play a main character who can fight and do things by himself, but he summons three little creatures who also can do stuff. So it's all Ghibli whimsy and great. It's amazing.
I'm trying to think. Weird retro games that nobody else knows of. So Final Fantasy. Okay, everybody knows that one. Everybody nods their head yes.
Yes.
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Some people nod their heads yes. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance.
Mm-hmm. I only know because of you.
So FFTA, the two that they made two of them for the Game Boy Advance. They are amazingly deep, amazingly good, complicated Final Fantasy games with the Final Fantasy Tactics style interface, but a really interesting class system that gets really, really tricky. And Final Fantasy Tactics, the first one, was my companion on my first tour overseas in 2003 when I realized that a folded-up Game Boy Advance fits perfectly in my top pocket of my combat shirt. So my Game Boy was with me everywhere, and if I ever had, 30 seconds of downtime, I'd flip over, play a level, close the Game Boy, go back to work. I had over 300 hours, I think, by the time I full completed that game, and I beat every mission, every way, everything possible, had everything unlocked. It's the only game I've ever full complete, and it was worth it. It's such a fun game.
So my honorable mention is Mario Party, because anytime I bring it up, people go, what?
Mario Party!
But it is awesome, and if you have a group of people, no matter the age difference or... even if you guys don't, you're not interested in the same things, Mario Party is a game that brings everybody together, and you can lose almost every single game and still have a good time. I say this because I lose almost every single game.
Who do you lose almost every single game to, Nutty?
Your mother.
My mom.
Yeah. She's a shark.
My mom. I'll tell the story to finish off the podcast.
Sure.
So when I got my first GameCube, I brought it home to visit. I went home to visit my parents for the weekend, and I brought my GameCube with me. And I had this game called Mario Party, which we had been playing. I'd been playing with my friends for a long time, and it's super, super fun. So I brought it home to share with my parents and my sister. So the four of us in the family, we all sit down and play it, and. Everybody goes to bed. I'm downstairs because I don't sleep, and my mom, also insomnic, doesn't sleep either. And my mom comes downstairs and says, well, that game we were playing today when we played all together, and we all had fun playing Mario Party. My mom says, well, is there a way to play alone?
Did she ruthlessly crush you?
Oh, no, wait. It gets better. And she's like, is there a way to play alone? I said, yeah, there is. You can set it up to play single player and have three computers play with you. You can play a four-person party just like we played today. He goes, can you show me how to turn on the machine? I'm like, yeah, okay. And then when I went back at the end of the weekend, I had to go back to base. I had to leave my GameCube there because mom didn't want it to leave. So for Christmas that year, we all had to chip in and buy my mom a GameCube.
Yeah, because you brought back your Super, left it there for her.
Right.
Or your 64, left it there for her, and then for Christmas we got her a GameCube.
Right, we got her a Cube. But my mom, because she doesn't sleep at night, my mom wanted something to distract her. So my mom got into completing and understanding every puzzle in Mario Party to the point where she just schools me at all of them. Because after we got her the GameCube, we, of course, had to get my mom a Wii and a Wii U.
And she's into Zelda and Spyro and Luigi's Mansion and all
Metroid.
The games.
My mom has full completed every Metroid Prime.
I love your mom. Like, your mom has now officially... Your dad made me happy because he loves cognac and you don't. Your mom has not made me happy because she is awesome.
I used to get phone calls from my mom at like 1 a.m. Federic, are you asleep? No, I'm not sleeping. What's up? What do you need? What's wrong? She goes, well, I'm playing Metroid Prime and I'm stuck on Ridley. How do I beat a mom? I've never made it to Ridley. You're on your own. Go to GameFAQs. I don't know.
So when your mom discovered that she liked games, what did she say to you about them?
oh, at one point, mom is telling me, saying, well, the games like the Metroid and the Zelda. And I'm doing the bad French accent because I can't help it when I'm talking about my mom. That who's, well, the games, they teach the children how to use the map and to navigate and to think and to problem solve and do the maths and the thinking. It's such an important thing. Oh, wow. Frederic, had I known that these games were so good at teaching you to do this, I would have let you play more of them when you were a kid. I'm like, mom, don't say that. Mom, no, the arguments that we have had, you cannot know. You can't do this to me right now.
Yep.
No, 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 no. You can't suddenly think that I was right. No, no, you don't get to say this.
How many fights would have been avoided?
Oh, my God. My entire childhood would have been different had my mom realized that games were cool.
You would have literally become a game designer. You would have been a game designer.
And on that note...
Hold on. I do have two late-minute additions that I forgot about. And the reason why I forgot about them because I finally traded them in after several years of hope.
All right, what are they?
Power through.
There's two. There's Quest 64.
Okay.
Ogre Battle 64.
Ooh, Ogre Battle. You traded that in? Do you know how much that's worth?
I know I did.
You
I did.
Monster. Ogre Battle, great series. Another JRPG.
Wonderful JRPG RTS.
Yep. Really good.
No, I did trade it in. I forgot about those. And Quest was about a little kid who was training to be a wizard, and you had to go through an open world or open world area and use magic. And it was on the 64, so the yellow buttons, the little directional pad buttons on the right-hand side, were your spells. And you could go like 2 and 3 and 4 levels deep using the different command buttons. And, yeah, man, those games...
That's a $300 game.
Which one? Ogre Battle 64?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I also have multiple other really, really expensive games sitting on my dresser as well.
Like, don't trade them in. Put them up on eBay.
So just shouting things out into the void, I'll say Front Mission.
Oh, God. The first Front Mission?
Monster Rancher.
Oh, yeah. What was the one that would call you at home? It was like the first ARG.
Oh, what was that called? Not Kingdom. It was Sovereign.
Mm.
Oh, man. You guys are bringing back like the fringes of my childhood. I remember
Sovereign would call you at home and tell you to stop playing. It would send you things in the mail.
By the way, now there's a date sim that does that.
Mm-mm.
It's from Japan. And on that note.
Princess Maker.
Yes.
You've done this twice now, stealing my catchphrase.
No, because it's a crossover. So I'm ending your way. You're going to end my way.
So I have to be polite?
Yes. And on that note, this has been the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast and...
Nerdy Bites.
And you can find us at talknerdytomepodcast.com with the number 2. And you'll find all our social medias there, so I'm not going to link them. And you can find Nerdy Bites where?
At nimloss.org.
And you can find all the social medias there. Thank you for joining us. Please let us know what games do you love that nobody else seems to love.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
If you like audiobooks and science fiction, you should be listening to Glow in the Dark Radio for free science fiction audio adventure every week, written and read by author and radio host Mike Luoma. Me. As an up-and-coming independent writer, I share my work for free each week, chapter by chapter, to get you into my science fiction, I hope. Check out all my books at glowinthedarkradio.com and listen to Glow in the Dark Radio free each week on iTunes, TuneIn, or just head to glowinthedarkradio.com.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimloss Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimloss.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.